Welcome to another edition of American Countdown as we discuss the impact on the pandemic and the panic from the pandemic on the American public and the American future. Tonight, resolved that Americans should get to choose what medicine they use, not the government. This goes to the core issues of something called the right to try. Shouldn't Americans choose and Americans decide what medicine, what health, how they treat their own body, what they put in their own body? After all, our Supreme Court has made the determination, and other courts have made the determination, that under the guise of the right to control your body, you have the right to kill a fetus inside of you. Not only that, they've also concluded in different contexts that the government and the state and hospitals have the right to pull the plug on someone, even against the interest of their family members. So how is it the government can have effectively the right to kill, that an individual can effectively have the right to kill, under the guise that it is for your individual choice over your own body and your own future, yet you're not supposed to have the right to try what medicine you want? This is particularly acute in the context of this pandemic, where people have proposed and propounded a various means of remedy, various potential methods by which a person can either boost their immune system or potentially deal with this disease. There's all kinds of exploratory medicines being looked at around the world. And the question is, should the government have a monopoly on who and what medicines you get to use? This is a question that goes to the core of choice. This goes to the core of democracy. This isn't a matter of what's good for you or what's bad for you. This is a matter of who gets to decide, who gets to choose what's good for you and what's bad for you. And that's what goes to the core of the question tonight. We're going to be interviewing a lawyer from Nevada who is trying to make sure that people have the right to choose the medicines of their own choice in trying to treat this disease. The problem is a lot of Democratic politicians, including the governor in Nevada, has precluded people from using various potential remedies that have been identified by other countries or other medical care providers or other individuals as potential means of addressing this particular virus. Shouldn't the ordinary person get to choose that and decide that? Let them have informed consent, know what the risks are, know what their responsibilities are, but why deny them any access to it? We live in a world at times where it's easier to get cocaine or heroin or opioids than it is to get basic treatment for diseases that people believe that can help them and can work with them and can prevent the disease from going to a deathly state. Shouldn't they get to choose? Well, we'll find out tonight as we get to discuss the issue with Joey Gilbert, who's going to be live with us in the bottom half of the hour. And the second hour, you're going to get to call in yourself and get to ask your questions as part of the jury, as part of the process of deciding what should happen in this country moving forward, what should be advocated for. We encourage all of you to share the links to this show. You can go to AmericanCountdown.news, and you can find the links for the show. Share it across every platform you have available to us. As you know, anybody that is second-guessing or questioning or contesting the institutional narrative is being told that they can't do so. And to such a degree that not only are a wide range of people being banned from big tech platforms and being shut out from the public debate and dialogue on our institutional established press. But today, for example, and yesterday, people like Oliver Darcy at CNN made an effort to help shut down and then celebrated the shutdown of Project Veritas, simply asking questions of nurses and doctors in New York. How did it become the case that simply asking questions of medical care providers about what's really happening related to this virus became itself some sort of bad act, some sort of dangerous form of misinformation? What is it that they're afraid of? Shouldn't we allow everybody to participate in the public square, just as we should allow everybody to choose what's best medicine for them? Let them decide. Give them adequate information. Hold people responsible if they happen to give bad advice or bad information, but by no means foreclose them from exercising that right. This has a long history in the United States. Why does it matter? If we dig into the history of the Food and Drug Administration and the Center for Disease Control and other methods of various doctors and medical professionals asserting a monopoly on medical care in this country, we can go back to the 19-teens and 1920s. We see someone like Bill Gates propounding we should extend the shutdown to even longer. He's very involved in various vaccines and other aspects. But of course, Bill Gates' father was one of the leaders of Planned Parenthood in Washington. And what does that relate to? Well, that goes back to Margaret Sanger and the history of what happened with Planned Parenthood, their entire origin, their entire orientation. This is something I have personal experience with because it also is going to relate to sterilizations. It's going to relate to the misuse and abuse of vaccine power. It's going to relate to the history of the FDA interfering with and impairing and at times being corrupted in the process of determining what medicine we're allowed to see, what medicine we're allowed to receive, what medicine we're allowed to choose to give ourselves. It's going to get to the issue of the media attacking currently anybody providing supplements or other things like that to help boost immune systems or help improve people's health and well-being, when in fact large numbers of the media and people within the medical community just over the last several weeks have been promoting the same mechanism of making sure you are as healthy as you can be during this time period, because the risk is not only coronavirus, but the flu and other particular viruses that may be out there. And it's just always sage and wise to be as healthy as you can. So why is the media launching an attack, or groups like Media Matters launching an attack on people simply promoting people's personal health? Why is there this obsession with not only monopolizing the medicine that can be accessible to you, but monopolizing the information you have about that medicine? Well, that goes back to Planned Parenthood. That goes back to an alternative and ulterior agenda about a century ago. I learned about it firsthand when I was a young student, a scholarship student at Yale University. There, I was part of a group that sponsored a dinner and a debate. And so what happened is there would be a discussion and a debate before the dinner, and then everybody would go down and join a dinner that would mix professors and students and speakers and people that were connected to the speaker. One of those people was the daughter of Justice Breyer, who sits on the U.S. Supreme Court. As part of that, we did one presentation that involved a high-ranking official with Planned Parenthood. Now, I didn't know a whole lot about who they were or what they were. I just assumed that their supposed goal was simply to promote the abortion access in various communities across the country. And what everyone thought of abortion, it seemed that they had no other agenda. I learned otherwise that night. I sat down to the next to the speaker for the dinner afterwards, and what he told me I have never forgot, even though that was about a quarter century ago. And as he was sitting there, he presumed things about me as a Yale student that also frightened me in what he told me. The way he put it, he said, Bob, have you looked at where the population is expanding? And I realized what he meant. What he meant was that his goal and objective with Planned Parenthood was to control low-income populations, disliked populations, and minority populations in places like Africa and Asia and Latin America, including in the lower-income areas of the United States. Then, of course, that motivated me to dig in a little bit deeper to Planned Parenthood's history, and in the process of doing so, researched a lot of the things Margaret Sanger had been saying in the 1920s in her publications and other aspects. And what it revealed was a history of the intercorporation of eugenics with Planned Parenthood. What a lot of Americans still don't know is that the Nazis attribute American eugenics movement to their own Nazi movement in Germany. In fact, the eugenics movement predated the rise of the Nazis in Germany. Here in the United States, our Supreme Court even greenlit that eugenics movement in one of the most horrendous and infamous decisions in American legal history. And in fact, often they are people in nice white lab coats, and doctors and medical professionals would go door to door and explain to people they were there to give them a helpful vaccine or something else. And it turned out to be a sterilization, so they could never have children of their own ever again. Approximately at least 70,000 such sterilizations took place right here in the United States. That doesn't even get to all of the experimentation that's happened on the African-American community, particularly targeted in a pernicious manner by people pretending to be acting in the best interest of the medical profession. Just Google Tuskegee experiments, or better yet, go to something like DuckDuckGo and actually search it, where you might get a more accurate exemplar of what's actually out there in the data and the information. Once again, people were promised they were receiving either a medical treatment or a vaccine, and instead it was experimentation on human beings. That's the ugly, unfortunate underbelly and history of doctors and people in powerful professional positions within medicine monopolizing medical care for ordinary everyday individuals. But by no means is it the limit of it. When we dig in deeper, we'll find a further examples of the FDA, the CDC, and others interfering with and impairing the ability to get access to medicines that people want that are accessible in other parts of the world. We have people at times that will fly to other countries just to get the medical care that they need or the medicine that they need, either at an affordable, accessible rate or simply because it's legal and accessible in that nation. Why should that be the case? Should not we let Americans choose their own medicine, give them informed consent, hold people responsible who mislead them or misrepresent the facts concerning the medicine, but let them choose? That's the whole concept of democracy. Let the ordinary American decide their own medical and professional future. Don't let the government or any practice of medicine have a monopoly on it. Now, the sad thing is when we dig deeper to discover sort of the uniting links between the legal system's approach to this, whether the issue is abortion, whether the issue is euthanasia, whether the issue is the right to try, we find a disturbing tendency to be deferential to the medical establishment. In fact, abortion itself was mostly originally green-lit in the Roe v. Wade decision to say doctors should be the ones to make that decision, not the government. They weren't actually promoting so much an individual right as they were the elevation and escalation of the medical profession to have power against the rest of us, to have monopoly power against the rest of us, something that was completely foreign to the founding of this country. Similarly, we find in the euthanasia cases a comparable tendency. Let doctors decide. So it's okay for doctors to euthanize you if they make a medical decision that's against the family's interest in pulling the plug, but it's not okay for you to choose if you want to have a physician assist you in choosing the timing of your own passing. One is constitutionally permissible, the other one somehow is not. That's how when we get to right to try matters, which are now part of state law thanks to the great work of the Goldwater Institute, we find that the Supreme Court hasn't issued any ruling on it, though it seemed to suggest that maybe you could have it, but they didn't clarify. And the only appellate decisions that have issued have said, no, you have no right to try, even in some of the most extreme and horrifying circumstances. This is an area of law that needs clarity, and there's no better opportunity for that clarity than right now in the middle of this pandemic. People should get to pick their own medicine. People should get to pick their own medical care. People can argue in the court of public opinion as to which is better, as to which is more suffice, as to which is risky and which is not. But that should not be a monopoly of the federal government. That should not be the monopoly of the state government. That should not be the monopoly of politicians. That should be a decision for the people, of the people, by the people, in a country that is supposed to be governed for the people, of the people, and by the people. Our constitutional liberties should protect the right to choose what you put into your own body with informed consent. And that should be the governance of our own medical system. It should not be the exclusive prerogative or privilege of the professional class. Even if the courts say so, even if the doctors say so, even if the politicians say so, this should be the public's choice, the people's decision, because this is, after all, the people's nation. In an update tonight on what's happening on coronavirus, let's look at some of the updated facts. First of all, the models were forecasting and foreshadowing this massive rise that was going to happen in hospitalizations in New York and in fatalities in New York, as the exemplar in the United States. But what's happening? Well, here, if we look at the hospitalization log scale showing what's happening in New York, instead of it being an exponential rate like it's supposed to occur, instead it's actually a flattened curve rate. So all these forecasts of doom and gloom just not coming true. Now let's look at what the actual underlying fatality data is out of New York City. How many people have died as of April 1st at 9:30 a.m. in New York City, according to its own health reports, that had no underlying conditions? And by no underlying conditions, they mean they didn't also have lung disease, cancer, immunodeficiencies, heart disease, kidney disease, liver disease. In other words, mostly fatal diseases. So far, only 14 people in New York City have died that did not have those other diseases related to coronavirus. Is that really reason to suspend our constitutional liberties? Is that really grounds to crush the economy? Is that really a good logic for risking the president's future reelection? Well, the suspension of constitutional liberties continue. If you didn't think they would use this as an excuse to lock up grandpa, who simply wanted to go to an engagement party, you'd be wrong. But even more risky, guess what now is child endangerment? Guess what now can lead the government to come and take away your kids, as has been threatened to people who simply exercise their First Amendment rights. Here, what happened is a family had a small get-together in New Jersey. They invited their 99-year-old grandfather. They had their six kids there. And what happened? Well, the police showed up and called it an illegal social gathering, even though they were gathering on the front lawn of their own home, outdoors, which is actually advisable in the context of this virus that spreads in close confined quarters predominantly. Hosting an engagement party. They were given a, not only was the 99-year-old grandfather arrested, they also issued, each was hit with, quote, a half dozen child endangerment counts. Each parent. How long is it before they just start taking away people's kids on the grounds that their views and ideas don't conform to the state? We now have unlawful gatherings. We now have illegal social gatherings, getting together in front of your own house with your own family in a legal social gathering that can get you into put into prison while the inmates are walking free. That's not all. All of a sudden, the governments have now decided, you know, whatever we're up to and whatever we're doing in terms of spending money or other activities, we would like to suspend all the transparency laws that govern us. Let's not have any Freedom of Information Act. Let's not have any sunshine laws. Let's not have any Privacy Act that gives you the right to access your what the government is doing to you. And so the California city officials, here's the headline, suspend transparency laws during coronavirus outbreak. The what they want is, quote, the public records, the public record laws that give people a window into how the government is spending public money to be suspended. In fact, as the article goes on to identify, they are seeking to delay the state's constitutionally mandated California Public Records Act, which requires transparency in government decision making and spending. They don't want you to know what they're doing. They don't want you to know why they're doing it. And that, and they're using this pandemic as the pretext to do it. Another suspension of constitutional liberties, another suspension of our civil rights. And how can you even have a remedy if you don't even know what the government is up to? As to the economic effect, polling and survey data out today shows that 30% of Americans took a major cut in wages just last month. Another 30% of Americans expect further economic problems or can't afford rent coming forward. We are seeing the largest scale economic impact and shutdown in the history of the United States of America. And according to the pandemic panic folks and promoters, we're going to have to extend this probably through all of May and maybe have to do it again come fall. How is that going to solve our economic problems? How is that going to be necessary? And how is that a narrowly tailored remedy to the public health issues that supposedly warrant this extraordinary suspension of constitutional liberties and shutdown of our economy? To give you an idea of what some of the consequences are, we're getting back to bread lines. So lines stretch around the corner at the California Food Disneyland as the happiest place on earth is crippled by its closure and charities warn of increase in pleas for help. Food banks experience surges. Businesses have hit hard and had to furlough employees. And how are we trying to answer this? With something called modern monetary theory that we'll get into more detail tomorrow with an economic analyst that has insight into that issue. But let's just look at one of the headlines from today. Trillions in coronavirus spending could explode deficits to levels we haven't seen since World War II. Deficits, by the way, that triggered inflation during that time period. That's not all. Ex-Energy Secretary Perry says that COVID-19 reaction will, quote, ravage the oil industry, and the oil industry in the United States, which was critical to also mitigating the scope of military conflicts in the Middle East, was our economic independence, both of which are now, quote, on the verge of a massive collapse. Now, let's go to another interesting aspect of what's taking place out there. Purportedly, there was going to be this massive hospital overcapacity problem. Our hospitals were going to be flooded with patients all across the country from the coronavirus. They're all going to be suffering severe and serious illness. The infection rate was going to be 60, 70% of the populace. 15 to 20% of them would have to go to the hospital. 5 to 10% of them would need ICU, intensive care unit care. We were going to be out of ventilators. We were going to be out of nurses. We were going to be out of doctors. But what's actually happening out there? Well, according to the headline, coronavirus financial losses prompt the Boston Medical Center to furlough 700 employees, including 10% of the hospital's workforce. Why are hospital employees being laid off if we're supposed to have this massive rush on hospitals? Coronavirus in Ohio, job woes in healthcare as 700 Mercy Health workers face furlough. Kentucky hospital chain furloughs about 500 employees as coronavirus saps business. Prisma Health joins growing list of U.S. hospitals to furlough employees. Remember, there was this big talk of demanding that young students get involved, that retirees get involved, that people whose licenses have been suspended get involved. Why are we furloughing employees in hospitals across the country if, in fact, we're in the middle of a hospital capacity crisis? Williamson Medical Center furloughing nearly 200 employees. There's example after example of this. Now let's go back to the issues of the right to try medical care of your own choice. Let's talk about all the different articles identifying potential treatments that are out there. Michigan Hospital reports some success using experimental coronavirus treatment. Why shouldn't Americans get to choose to use that if they have confidence in it, if a Michigan hospital has sufficient confidence to at least try? Existing drugs may offer treatment for coronavirus outbreak. These are existing drugs that have already been tested, already used for other things. Why shouldn't an ordinary American have the right to choose what medical care they have? Doctors turn to malaria drugs as potential coronavirus treatment. Shouldn't ordinary people have the right to pick their medical care rather than the government? Catching up to coronavirus, top 60 treatments that are in development. Are we supposed to wait 18 months or 2 years when people are already dead before we allow them to have the choice of their own medical care? New York hospitals treating coronavirus patients with vitamin C. Remember how there's other people saying, hey, don't listen to that. You don't need, there's nothing that could help your immune system. There's nothing that could work. Well, why are New York hospitals then treating coronavirus patients with vitamin C? High temperatures, saline solutions, antimalarial drug. These may be able to treat coronavirus. Shouldn't Americans get to choose? A malaria pill from the 1940s has caught the eyes of doctors, analysts, and even Elon Musk as a possible virus treatment. Shouldn't Americans get to pick what their own medicine is? Scientists chase two fronts in how to treat coronavirus. There's no magic drugs right now, but some of these may work. Shouldn't people get the choice to decide their own medical care? These 19 companies are working on coronavirus treatments or vaccines. All kinds of potential treatments. Different potential vaccines. Should we wait 2 years before the government allows people to use it? An updated guide to coronavirus drugs and vaccines in development. There's many all over the place. The World Health Organization launches a mega trial of the four most promising coronavirus treatments. Do we have to wait for the FDA to bureaucratically check it off before Americans get to pick their own medical care? Example after example, 8 experimental coronavirus treatments to watch. Israel's MDA to treat coronavirus patients with new potential vaccine. FDA admits that they should have widespread use of unproven drugs to treat coronavirus because the possible benefits outweigh the risks. Isn't that the case in many instances? Isn't the benefit of the American people getting to choose their own medicine a benefit that should be part of that calculus? Drugs that Trump trotted for COVID-19 treatment have now been added to the shortage list. If it wasn't for Trump, this probably wouldn't happen at all. But that isn't all that's happening. Let's talk about the history of what happens when we have monopolized medical care in this country or any place in the world, and you as a citizen are not allowed or are discouraged to picking your own medical care or your own health care, however you do that, whether it's organics, whether it's natural health, whether it's immune boosting systems, whether it's a particular form of medicine, whether it's experimental treatment, whatever it is. Shouldn't that be your choice, your prerogative, your power, your right? Well, let's look at what happens when we let the government choose just in the last several weeks. The Macron government lied about the effectiveness of masks to hide coronavirus errors. As Tucker Carlson has identified, the feds kept lying to us about the benefit and value of masks. Remember how many people said, oh, masks aren't useful, and it came from influential informational sources, the establishment press, big well-known doctors and other people. It turned out they were wrong, or most likely wrong. When a distiller attempted to transfer to creating sanitizer to help people and meet the demand for it and keep the price affordable and accessible to people, they were threatened by the FDA with red tape to prevent them from doing it. More stories about how the U.S. government is lying about face masks, various state government officials lying about face masks, the WHO lying and misleading people about face masks and their potential benefit in the case of the virus. Now, there's been a recent attack on anybody that said, hey, look at ways to boost your immune system. Even though there was an infectious doctor expert that appeared on Joe Rogan that talked about you should always try to take steps to boost your immune system. Does that mean it's a magical cure and prevention to every disease out there? No, of course not. Does it mean it's a prevention and a cure to this virus? No, of course not. But the idea that you shouldn't be encouraging people or motivating people to boost their immune system seems a very peculiar thing to do in the context of the virus pandemic that we're facing right now. In fact, the press itself, doctors, medical associations, clinics, other providers of care, other health associations have actually themselves been promoting different ways you can use to boost your immune system. Headline, facts and myths about boosting your immune system that go into different ways you can help boost your immune system during the virus. Myths versus facts about your immune system from WebMD. Talk about eating fruits, talk about veggies, talk about sleep, talk about psychology, talk about attitude. These are all things that they talk about. Being able to boost your immune system. Another article from a headline about an immune boost against the coronavirus. Another article about guidance against wearing masks for the coronavirus is wrong. So once again, it was the non-establishment press. It was the outside of the gatekeeper institutional narrative, to use the phrase from Eric Weinstein or to use the phrase from Peter Thiel. It was those people outside of it that said, hey, by the way, masks are probably good for you and you should ignore what the World Health Organization and other people are telling you. Turns out they were right. And this is just the most recent illustration. The Scott Gottlieb, who's been one of the big promoters of the panic for the pandemic, was someone who was highly criticized during the Obama administration for how he handled opioids. Kim Kardashian even ended up getting into a fight with the FDA. That's the nature of the FDA. The FDA is willing, ready, able to crush anybody in their way to promote their monopoly over medical care in this country. FDA Spygate, new challenges. New revelations challenge the New York Times investigation of the agency enemies list. They purported the FDA had an enemies list, was targeting people, was trying to go after people that they didn't like. That's a misuse and misappropriation of governmental powers. And again, it's the danger of having a governmental agency monopolize medical care decisions in this country. CDC and FDA, the enemy, as was articulated in a Wall Street Journal opinion piece. Now, that's not all. Of course, you have the history of the misuse and misappropriation of vaccines and the monopoly of medical power leads to things like what? How the CIA's fake vaccination campaign endangers us all. The headlines like this. CIA says, don't worry. We'll no longer use our vaccine programs as cover for our various illicit activities. That's an NPR story. This is not, some outside conspiracy theory. This is the establishment press admitting it many years after it occurred, and they didn't talk about it. What about these issues? Well, just recently and just in the past decade or so in Kenya, there were concerns raised by Catholic doctors and others as to whether the vaccines were improperly incorporating some form of sterilization, much like what happened in the 1920s and 1930s when we had sterilization drives in the United States. UNICEF denies that Catholic bishops claim that the Kenyan tetanus vaccine is laced with a birth control hormone. As is written by a prominent African-American writer, there's a long history of the misuse and misappropriation of the monopoly of medical care to target and experiment on African-Americans. These are just some of the examples. When we come back, we will have a further discussion and conversation with a lawyer who's challenging this in Nevada, trying to make sure people have the right to try and the medicines of their own choice. So come back and join us. Share the link everywhere and every place you can, and we'll get into a further conversation and discussion and debate as to who should choose your medicine, you or the government. Welcome back to American Countdown. We're going to be doing a conversation and a discussion on the witness stand tonight. Is going to be Joey Gilbert. Joey's a lawyer in Nevada, former boxing champion, trying to make sure people have the right to choose their own medical care in this context of this pandemic. That's important for all of us. It should be something that's foundational and fundamental. And it's a problem that isn't just limited to Nevada. It's a problem across the country in different jurisdictions and places where either right to try laws don't exist or they're being interpreted in a manner not to apply to this particular medical crisis. Here you have headlines. Even this is from the Washington Post. Desperate families struggle to get experimental treatments for coronavirus. It's a continuous, constant issue. So let's go to Joey and see how he's doing and get into the witness stand part of the show tonight.
How you doing tonight?
How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing good. I'm doing really well. I had a little bit of a scare, as you just mentioned, with this coronavirus hit close to home. My father, former Homeland Security medical director for Homeland Security for the state of Nevada, and frontline guy out there, works in an occupational environment, and tested positive for coronavirus. Came home. My mom, caught it, of course, later. She's living in the same house with him. And, weeks ago, I had done my own study. I figured, actually, when Trump shut down the travel from China, I knew there was a problem. I just thought, in the middle of this trade agreement, what's really going on here? So I find a French study. They're using this hydroxychloroquine successfully, along with the Z-Pack and zinc sulfate. Thought to myself, well, if it comes here, it'll be something that my family can use. And then quickly, as things started coming across the country and my dad tested positive, I was fortunate that we were able to call in this medication right before a ban was put in place by our governor. And initially, I do think that the governor did act the best interest of the people, and that he didn't want, a lot of people were going, making a run on the medication and trying to stockpile it, and they didn't want it to be run out. But I think once that it became known that this was a major impact in this pandemic, that all, efforts should have been made to get this into the hands of people that tested positive or, with the high symptoms. And basically, as you just said, if you want a right to try it, a simple malaria treatment that could help stop something that could kill you, then you should have absolutely the right to try it. And so that's where the concern came. I wanted to save lives, nothing more. I don't need anything else to do like you. I'm very busy. And this is just something that landed square on my face, and I had to deal with it. And so we dealt with it. And I'm just, like I said, feeling very blessed that our governor and his people either made a decision or made a clarification. Whatever happened yesterday, you couldn't call it in. Now a practitioner can call it in for 14 days if you have a positive COVID test. And that was as of sometime today. So I'm happy that, we got vocal, we got loud, and through people like yourself and organizations like yourself, we're able to keep getting the word out there. So thank you for allowing me to continue to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's fascinating about all this is you look at we had someone on yesterday talking about this in the Second Amendment context, the right to purchase weapons and the ability to defend yourself. What's interesting here is the same pattern. In other words, here you were someone in a position where you had a need. You had a need to make sure your parents were taken care of. You were able to use your independent investigative and research skills to access information outside of the political establishment, outside of the medical establishment, and be able to find it, to locate what's relevant and pertinent that could be applicable, then be able to use your legal skills and the people that you know and your advocacy skills to make sure that your parents got what they needed, and now have been able to go to the governor and be able to successfully argue that everyone should have access to this, that fits within the proper parameters. What's interesting is if that wasn't available, if you didn't have someone like you who had that set of skills and mindset, if you didn't have the access to that information from those independent places and sources, such as the French survey and study, if you didn't have your own legal skills or know someone that had access to the system, the political processes, the ordinary person may not have been able to have the means to be able to make the advocacy necessary to protect people like your parents. And what's fascinating to me is, like, I was going through and I saw these articles in Media Matters and other places sort of bashing people who are simply promoting supplements and other forms just to boost immune systems, which I saw lots of people doing. And I, just to make sure I wasn't, partially losing it, I went back and started looking at all the different articles that were available that talked about, can supplements fight the virus? But, and whether or not they could fight the virus, they are immune boosters that could help you in other contexts, help you recover from other things. Another article, supplements to support immune health, from the GNC. Another, sick of getting sick, health plans. It's actually a health plan, super boost your immune system. This was being recommended by medical plans across the country just weeks ago. Health expert, your immune system is the best defense against any virus or infection. Where's that from? It's from the University of Miami. Coronavirus UK, 10 foods and vitamins to help boost your immune system. How to keep your immune system healthy during the coronavirus pandemic, according to experts. And this is an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer. The easy ways to boost your immune system and dealing with coronavirus, another article from the Telegraph in the United Kingdom. How to strengthen your immunity during the coronavirus pandemic talks about diet. Who's that? That's CNN. Now purportedly talking about this is somehow bad. Dr. Oz shares four ways to strengthen your immune system on the Today Show in the context of coronavirus. Six steps to boost your immune system against coronavirus. Another doctor talking about different things you can do to help boost your immune system because it's always good in any context, but also within a pandemic context. How to boost the immunity system against coronavirus from a medical science review article. How to boost your immune system to avoid colds and coronavirus from The Guardian in the United Kingdom. Six ways to arm your immune system to fight coronavirus from what? Psychology Today. Can you boost your immune system to help? This is from ABC in an Australian article. New potent way to boost immunity. Where's this from? Science Daily. Maybe doctors shouldn't need the government's position to fight coronavirus. Reason.com. You are willing and able to take the steps to go through this process to make sure people could have the same remedies available that you got for your parents. As you went through this, were you nervous at any stage or any place that maybe you couldn't get it or get it continued?
Well, you know, absolutely. You say I was nervous. I didn't, you know, for about 10 days, I didn't sleep much. It's just something, like I said, anybody that, you know, did a little research and realized what was happening. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head in so many points. I mean, my God, the fact that we're allowed to search for the information in China, these people couldn't even find what was really the reason they were being bolted in their apartments. I mean, it's just scary to think of what the government can or cannot do for its people if it doesn't want to. And so here I was merely a voice. I just think that there was so much happening so fast that things got lost in transition. I don't think the governor ever meant to prevent people from a positive coronavirus test from having access to the medication. But at the same time, there was a disconnect there in how they were going to get it. And obviously, once you're turning positive, once you've got positive, you don't want to be wandering around some pharmacy or, you know, stopping by someone's house. And so I just thought at the end of the day, if the whole point was to prevent the overrunning of our fragile healthcare systems and our ICU beds, then what are we not doing by, you know, to get this, you know, antiviral medication that could or could not help? But at the end of the day, what were the side effects? A stomach ache, and they give it to pregnant women. So at the end of the day, with 35 million doses donated by the manufacturers, with, you know, warehouses with tens of millions of doses, and that I was finding across the country, I was saying, what are we doing? You know, it was just at that point in time, I just got loud. I got vocal and I put up facts. I put up facts about the doctor in New York who's cured 699 patients and 350 patients in the French studies. And some of the stuff that was happening was just able to obviously have a factual context behind all of it and then stay vocal and really provide some hard hitting facts. And of course, the personal story added a touch. My father is the toughest guy I know. And for this to hit him that way, you know, and to see him in that state and then bounce back so quickly, it works. Okay. Abracadabra, whatever you need me to do, let's get this, into the hands of anybody that's tested positive, and especially the Vegas area. Look at a town, you know, so dependent on its service industry. And if you've got positive tests down there, everybody down there should have it. Everybody in that household should be on it. You should be able to sign a waiver if you want to experiment with it. If you don't, whatever you need to do. And then now we end this thing in 2 weeks flat. Knock it down 2 weeks flat versus, you know, another 30, 35, 40 days. And so, I'm not saying there's anything behind this political. I don't think it, but I do think people. We're slow walking stuff. And I think that once the FDA jumped in there and gave that, you know, emergency use of availability, that as soon as that became a part of the deal, it should have been green light in every state. I mean, at the end of the day, I understand states, but this is an we're not talking about cannabis. We're talking about an FDA approved drug that's been around for 70 some years, been prescribed off label 30 years. Like, come on, guys. Like, if this can even help this much and it can save lives of our first responders, our firemen, our healthcare workers, these guys are being told to reuse N95 masks for days, right? They're nervous. They have symptoms. They're scared. They should be. And they're going home to their families not knowing if I get sick and get them sick, are they going to be okay? And I wasn't cool with that. At the end of the day, the older folks I know in this community, my parents, the parents of the people I love, knowing that they could catch this and die, that was what was most important to me. And now I just am, just like I said, delighted and just so feel so blessed that our prayers were answered, our people listened, you know, hearts were opened, this got done, and now let's make sure it happens in every state. And if you want to try this medicine, if you have a positive coronavirus test and you want to try this medicine, this hydroxychloroquine, get on it. You know, you got to combine it with the Z-Pack. You got to combine it with zinc sulfate. I am not a doctor. I'm not prescribing medicine. Just Google, you know, coronavirus, hydroxychloroquine, French study, or Google coronavirus, hydroxychloroquine, New York doctor. And after you read what you see there, get on the medication. Tell whoever's telling you not to get it to shut up, and let's go. Because we need to knock this thing in the dirt and get ready to bounce this country back. I believe we do it. And I believe that, like I said, any lag time can kill us. And so we need to get going.
Exactly. I think it's very much sort of the institutionalization of the bureaucracy that creates this lethargy, that even if they have no bad motives at all, no bad intentions at all, no bad incentives at all, the effect and consequence is we live in sort of a Brazil-like the movie, a Brazil-like world where you have these politicians who can clog up the system even with the best intentions, thinking they're protecting people, thinking they're saving people, thinking they're healthy, helping people when they're really putting them at risk. It reminds me, my old populism professor at Yale wrote a book called Populist Democracy and the Questions of Capitalism in a Progressive Era in Portland, Oregon. And one of the big parts of this book, and people can find it and get it on Amazon or anywhere else, is he goes into how part of the populism was resisting aspects of the misappropriation or misuse of the vaccine movement to monopolize medical power in Portland, and why they were trying to discipline the excesses of that movement to make sure that people got the medical care they needed, but that choice and power remained in the hands of the ordinary person. And the way they did it is things like what you did. They self-educated. They self-informed. They had access to open source information outside of the medical and political establishments. Then they took political action. They made sure that there was a difference that could happen. And even though there were unfortunate decisions like the Supreme Court ruling that led to 70,000 forced sterilizations in this country, that activism helped birth a movement that ultimately put an end to those kind of things and did things like what we're seeing today. And I think a lot of people don't know some of the things that you're able to find and that you're able to pursue in Nevada, which is that there is a right to try in most states now. 41 different states have a right to try law on their books. And particularly in cases of medicines that we, as you're pointing out, these are medicines that are not some novel, crazy new theory. These are medicines that have been available in some cases for 60 to 70 years. We know everything about how some of these medicines work.
That's what killed me. I just couldn't, at the end of the day, I was saying, what are you talking about? This has been used for so long. Stop trying to scare everybody. And at the end of the day, I don't want to say it was just because President Trump tweeted it, but here's a guy that is a no BS. You know, get stuff to the people quickly. Time is of the essence. True CEO, get it out the door. And he saw it probably. And as I've, you know, learned from those around him, he's just an absolute consumer of information and just takes as much in as he possibly can. He saw what he saw, much like I saw, and he made a quick and a judgment call. And I was just, again, hopeful that our government here would see that. They did. Now there's going to be lives saved. At the end of the day, this is, you know, we are one big family. You know, this whole political division thing game that's been played these last 4 years has just been just cruel. I mean, I never liked the former president. I never liked anything he did, but I would have never stepped in the way of any progress he tried to make or people or helping this country or people in this country or assisting in the pandemic and for some political measure. And now it just seems so different. And so I don't think that happened here in Nevada. I still think that we are a pretty tight fit community, at least in northern Nevada. But my brothers and sisters in Las Vegas are the same way. And I know that we wanted to see healing of the community. We wanted to see no death. We wanted to see no destruction and relieve as much pain as possible. And I know now that by at least giving people, like you said, you know, knowing that comfort that I would have access to this now. I mean, if you saw my Facebook Messenger, I've never seen anything like it. First of all, I didn't even really realize I had it like that. And I've never seen so many messages before. I've never seen so many likes. My law firm's phone's been ringing off the hook with older folks calling me and thanking me for sticking up for them. And all I was doing was just simply trying to provide access to a medication that I knew would be very, very important to them if they caught this virus. So at the end of the day, you know, I think one of the lessons that I also learned is that, you know, you can never do too much. You know, I made a couple of comments and I just kept following up with it because I was overwhelmed by the feedback. And I think that's probably, you know, what motivates some of us is I felt like truly at that point now, I'm fighting for everybody's mom and dad. I have a 71-year-old father. I have a 70-year-old mother. She's got asthma. You know, how many of those other mothers are out there and grandmothers, and whose grandkids wouldn't be able to see grandma and grandpa this time next year if I don't rattle a few cages or at least be vocal? You know, a lot of people might not have appreciated my style, my brashness, but I felt like, look, people are going to die if we don't act. And so again, you know, huge shout out to you for your platform and for allowing me to share this and for allowing all of us to kind of, you know, get on here and provide the information to people that are willing to be open-minded and listen and not just, you know, go with the sheep.
Oh, exactly. I mean, what you were doing was critical and essential and fundamental. It's what every American should be looking at doing. And there's ways that you can find to inform yourself, educate yourself. You can share the link to this broadcast to lots of places. You can find ways to make sure you're self-informed and self-educated. You can thank Joey by going to joeygilbertlaw.com, or you can follow him on Twitter at @joeygilbertinc. So you can find people that are out there advocating for the right position for the ordinary people against sometimes either politicians well-intending or not well-intending, creating a crisis unnecessarily for us, and the suspension of constitutional liberties, the deprivation of necessary medicine, the denial of our economic activity, because they've been misdirected in some cases either by malevolent intent or some cases entirely innocent intent. That's the nature of the regulatory authority and agency's involvement. It's also important to educate yourself on the right to try laws. So there's a great institute on this. You can research right to try. You can go to Goldwater Institute, help sponsor the laws. The right to try laws exist in 41 states, exist almost all across the country aside from a few states. You won't be shocked at what some of those states are. There's a good argument that there's a right to try in the Constitution itself. And this was some of the issues that Joey was raising, that others were raising, that got the attention of the politicians to say, one, they don't want to be on the wrong side of this medical cure or potential help and assistance at this key time, but also they don't want to be the test case to determine whether or not there's a constitutional right to try in this country. And that was important to understand, to put it into context. For example, in the past, this gives you the importance of what Joey did in Nevada, is there's a long, unfortunate, ugly history within the FDA of going really slow. Typical vaccine often takes 18 months or more to authorize. In fact, Fauci made that kind of description today. To give you a headline article, dead on arrival, federal compassionate use leaves little hope for dying patients. And what they talk about was an investigation revealed that the entire system for gaining access to a medication the FDA had not yet approved was so rigged with bureaucracy and disincentives within that bureaucracy that it often is bound to fail in most cases for most ordinary people. And so that's why it's important to understand your constitutional rights in this context, your statutory rights in this context, your ability to get access to these necessary medications, your ability to take political activism and to make it a reality, and to recognize the importance of ordinary people acting in their own best interest to keep little d democracy alive in the provision of medical care as much as our political system and economic system. In your experience, Joey, what would be some of your recommendations to people who are in other states or in other jurisdictions where they're still facing pushback on this precise issue?
I think, you know, that's a great question. What can other people in other states do? I think we're living in such a unique time that, you know, look, there were obviously, you know, people similarly situated to myself, also scared, also worried, older folks that know the governor or know the friends of the governor. And I really do think that, you know, in all these other states, collectively together, we're very powerful. And I would just encourage, you know, to get your voice out there on social media. People will back you. I mean, for the right stuff, it doesn't take much. And I, like I said, I was blown away by the response of once I started it and became a voice. I felt immediately empowered that I was the voice for the people, for the folks here who were scared. And let me tell you something. There are a lot of scared people. There are, like I said, there are a lot of, you know, they just because the firemen, you know, see all this crazy stuff and the police officers see all this stuff, doesn't mean they're not afraid of a virus that they can't stop, that could make their little daughter sick or their wife sick or their old, you know, their older, parents sick. So at the end of the day, I mean, you got people that are worried. They're not just worried about themselves. I know people that are tough as nails that the last thing they're worried about is this coronavirus. They really are. You can't get them to stop. But that doesn't mean that they can't now transmit it and then it gets to someone that does need it. So all I would say is be vocal. You know, don't think you don't matter, you know, and reach out, you know, to those that you know and ask that they support you. And basically, you know, I didn't have to say much. I kind of started the ball rolling and then realized, you know, how many people were also as concerned about this. And also, again, such a unique age, how many people had also done some research and found this information and were actually quoting me on the French study and on stuff out of South Korea and on stuff out of New York. And did you hear about this doctor in Illinois? And actually sent me more information than I even thought was available. So I would say that as together we're an army, you know, and I think, you know, that there's other stuff you can talk about. It's why they don't want you armed. That's why, because the people together without the political division, we are the most powerful force. We will protect our neighbors. We will protect ourselves. I don't care if you're a Democrat, Libertarian, whatever you are. You're my brother. You're my sister. I don't care what race. It's so silly how this has gotten so out of control. Because at the end of the day, I've never been looked at as a racist or something like this. But all of a sudden, I'm supporting President Trump and I'm like an evil, you know, misogynist, racist jerk that only cares about himself. And I swear I, you know, I fight that on a daily basis until people meet me or they see me doing something like this. They would never know. So my advice to those people out there, doesn't matter who you are, what you do, what your background is. If you have something you're passionate about that you think is going to save lives and affect your community, get out there, get talking about it, get motivated, and, you know, put your resources together and people will get behind you.
Exactly. It's a great template, a great exemplar of the combination of, yo, use your tools and means of getting self-educated and self-informed. Don't rely exclusively on establishment, gatekeeper institutional narrative sources, It's the medical establishment or political establishment or news establishment. Find as much facts as you can from as many reliable sources as you can. Then take action. Get connected to your community, share that information across your social media networks, across your politically connected networks, then use the combination of the two to directly go to the politicians and the decision makers and the policy makers to make a real meaningful difference, like Joey was able to do in Nevada, that not only protected and safeguarded his own parents, but protected and safeguarded people all across that state. And not only that, set a precedent for other states to follow. And one of the important parts of that entire process is that we have this platform, and we have this platform thanks exclusively to our sponsor. So we want to thank, people can go to InfoWarsStore.com. People can buy whatever product they want. People can buy coffee. People can buy t-shirts. People can buy anything they want. But this includes, particularly in this existing environment where you should do things to make sure you have that you are as healthy as you possibly can, and that you should do things that boost your immunity, do things that protect yourself, because in this context, there's a range of things that can happen to you medically because you're isolated, because you're insulated, because you're not as outdoors as you often are or would be otherwise. So find the means and the remedy available. Currently, in order to make sure people have this access, even though these products are selling out, the InfoWars store has agreed to do huge discounts to make them affordable and accessible to people. These products will probably be gone in a week or two. And in order to recognize a lot of people don't have the economic wherewithal or means available to them currently, many of them are 40% off. Many of them are 60% off. This includes Survival Shield X3. This includes the Red Pill. This includes a range of products that can make your life better. This includes skin creams. This includes a toothpaste, a wide range of things you can get right now to help make this platform available and accessible so we can all make an individual difference and make sure that everybody has universal access to the things they need in terms of the information that changes things. Come back and on the ballot, and then we'll have a further conversation with Joey when we come back. Thank God for President Trump, and thank God for people like Joey Gilbert, willing to make a difference to protect their families and to protect the rest of us, even when they're getting called every name in the book, by simply reminding and remembering what makes us all Americans and the distinctive American experiment of little d democracy. Get self-informed, get self-educated, get literate in the relevant information. Educate yourself, educate others. Share this link, share other links of information that you value to other people. Also extend that and expand that and take action upon it. by being active in the social media and your social media networks of communities and people, and then take political action where it's helpful, take legal action where it's necessary. Joey, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it. For people who want to call in, we'll take calls in the latter half of the hour. You can call 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-2539. If you're calling internationally, remember to dial your area code. You can also dial 1-512-646-1776. That's 1-512-646-1776. 1776 was the spirit of Joey. He was a boxer before he was a lawyer, so it comes with a noble tradition. As one last final question for you, Joey, thanks for being part of the show. How are your parents doing?
You know what? My parents are making a full recovery. My dad has now been 1 week on the treatment, the whole little protocol like we talked about, the hydroxychloroquine, the Z-Pak, and the zinc sulfate. My mom started hers on Thursday, so she's a few days behind. But both of them are home. They're recovering. They're on their treadmill. And again, you know, one thing I want to say is I don't know that I played any role other than just being a voice, being a mouthpiece. At the end of the day, the people that what mattered most got done. That's all that we care about. Lives are going to be saved now. And I'm just, like I said, very, very blessed to have the relationships I have and the contacts I have, and just hope that, you know, lives were saved because of this, and that we can all, you know, get returned to normal here soon, get back to work, back to school, and, you know, doing what we love.
Absolutely. Thanks, Joey. Your work was fantastic. It was important. It was significant. It was consequential. And it's an important exemplar for other people out there who are going to face the same situation as we go forward. So thanks for joining us. You can find him at Joey Gilbert, INC on Twitter. You can find his website, joeygilbertlaw.com. And it's an important exemplar of how we can change things in this pandemic context, when politicians sometimes are using it as a pretext, either out of bureaucratic ineptitude or out of malevolent intent or out of anything else, to make sure we check them and correct them as needed and necessary. So thanks a lot, Joey.
Thank you so much.
As we go back into some of the background of why we need to make sure that the medical profession and the politicians do not monopolize medical care in this country, aside from the critical example that Joey exemplified in Nevada and getting the care not only for his parents, but for all the people in Nevada, getting even the Democratic governor to reverse himself, and under the consideration and the persuasion of Joey's social activism and his ability and his political connections and his willingness to share relevant and pertinent information on alternative and independent news sources outside of the gatekeeper institutional narrative. Let's go back to what really happened in the full scope and scale of what happened during the eugenics era in the United States, and when those folks wanted to have a monopoly over the medical profession. Here's like just one of the articles you can find for yourself in case you question it or doubt it. The eugenic value of birth control propaganda. This is an article written by whom? Margaret Sanger. October 1921. It was published in the Birth Control Review, which was her primary publication. New York University now puts it up today, and you can see some of the horrifying, terrifying, frightening consequences of what happens when we let the medical profession monopolize medical care in this country. As another example of a recent article in America Magazine, Margaret Sanger was a eugenicist. Why are we still celebrating her? Going into all the detail of the sort of horrific ideas that she voiced and expressed during her time as the founder of Planned Parenthood. The Strange World of Margaret Sanger and Birth Control Review. You can find this article from a PhD. And what it is this individual goes through and does a review of the complete set of all of her journal, The Birth Control Review, and finds it some of the most disturbing and unsettling ideas he ever saw expressed. This included her association with racists, her association with anti-Semites, people who despised everyone who was not a Nordic god or goddess. Sounds a little Hitlerish. Talking about demanding coercive eugenics programs across the country under the guise of trying to help people, they were hurting people. So that's what happens when we let the medical profession have exclusive control. The Nazis had a monopoly on medical care in Germany. It's not something we should replicate or repeat here. Now, going into other aspects of the constitutional liberties that we currently face, And folks can continue to call in because we'll take your calls from you, the jury, now that we're finished with the witness stand part of the presentation. Again, those numbers are 877-789-2539, 877-789-2539. Or internationally, you can dial your area code from your country, 1-512-646-1776. One other issue that's currently pending is the degree to which you're allowed to do simple things like pray in public, protest in public, circulate petitions on behalf of a candidacy and or cause during these lockdown orders, or simply go to church. We're in the peculiar situation right now that courts have recognized a constitutional protection from these lockdown orders for the purposes of conducting abortions by Planned Parenthood, just like we were just talking about. But you're not allowed to pray outside of a Planned Parenthood. We're in a situation where inmates are being released, including murderers, child molesters, rapists, other hardcore criminals, either from jail on charges or even from prison after being convicted. Talked by AOC and others of releasing everybody from Rikers Island. Maybe Harvey Weinstein will get a free ticket out of jail using the coronavirus. But it's not the only example or illustration of it. These restraints on people's ability to pray has led to a pastor in Florida being prosecuted and charged. So the Texas Attorney General issued a release saying that there is a First Amendment right to expression of religion and that all lockdown orders have to be considered in light of that. The guidance for houses of worship during the COVID-19 crisis was just issued by the Texas Attorney General, recognized that the First Amendment to the United States Constitution and provisions within the Texas Constitution protect the right of religious expression of communities of faith, further recognizing that houses of worship provide essential services. Indeed, as we have been arguing all the way through, the expression of constitutional liberty should be always identified as an essential activity. That should be in every lockdown order across the country. So then the only issue we would be debating is the economic consequences of these shutdown orders, not the constitutional consequences of these shutdown orders. Yet there are still some problematic aspects in this order because it attempts to say that a whole bunch of the social distancing requirements can still be enforced against a church wanting to get together even on Easter Sunday on the grounds that those are narrowly tailored means to deal with the virus. How is that necessarily narrowly tailored? That goes back to the question of whether or not there is even a threat from this virus to the degree, the severity, the scope, the scale that is being suggested by the various public health promoters of this panic from the pandemic. As we see more and more data and evidence again today that the death rate is flattening or declining in Italy for the 11th straight day, the daily death rate growth continues to go down, 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 and down. So even though the number of deaths increase and they give you those frightening numbers, the rate of growth is no longer exponential. It is already flattened. The curve has been flattened in places like Iran, which didn't shut down its economy at all. It's being shut. The curve rate is flattened in places like Italy, which did employ a shutdown, but belatedly. So we're seeing that the shutdown has no correlation or causation as yet from the evidence available to us in terms of being able to lead us to believe that this is necessary or a narrowly tailored means of suspending people's constitutional liberties in the United States or shutting down our economy. So we have every reason to take the kind of actions that Mike took in protecting his Second Amendment, which we talked about yesterday, or Joey took in protecting our right to medical care in Nevada today. So that is important and that is critical. So let us go to some of the, but let's hear from you. You're the jury. You're the public community. Try to have your questions distilled into about 1 minute so we can get to as many people as possible and to give you as full and forthright an answer as we can. First, let's talk to George in Texas.
How you doing, Robert?
How are you, George?
All right. I know you're not familiar with Central Texas a lot, but I live up here in Georgetown, and it's a completely conservative area. There's a place called San Gabriel Park. I sent the photos in, and they put a little sign on the basketball court. Don't come on here. We're here to protect your rights or your health. And they actually put chains on the basketball hoops so that they couldn't shoot. And so my son's looking at it, and he's like, Dad, let's go get a broom. I said, well, it's too late. So tomorrow, we're going to go over there, and we're going to play a game of horse. And I'm going to bring a broom. And if we even get one basketball to stick in there because we suck at it. But we're going to do that because the park is open. There was nobody on the basketball court. And then as we're driving out, I see this vet with his three daughters riding scooters on the basketball court. And I yelled out, "Hey, you're breaking the law, dude." And I was being sarcastic. Well, he looked at me like, "You can go screw yourself." And then he realized he saw my plate, my disabled vet plate, and said, and he started laughing. He got it. So if it's happening in conservative areas where they're going to take the time to put chains on a basketball hoop, that's scary. That's sad. Does that make sense?
Oh, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's completely terrifying and frightening, the scope and scale to what we're seeing all across the country. We're seeing even conservative governors in places like Texas, in places like Mississippi, now in Florida, capitulate to this political pressure, even as the evidence behind this pandemic panic continues to get weaker and weaker and weaker. You have people that are sort of former reporters, venture capital analysts, other individuals who are pointing this out. We're pointing out that the data simply does not back up this idea that this pandemic is the next plague. Just looking at estimates, for example, there was a study that was put out by the University of Washington, another study put out by someone known as Professor Murray, another one put out by Imperial College, some others from other countries and locations. And what they're finding is they overestimated the number of people that were supposed to be in hospitals today in the United States by a ratio of 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 or more, depending on the study. And what's significant about that is because they were presuming endless exponential growth, when they're overestimating it by 4 now, they're overestimating it by 16 in a couple of days, by 32 in a couple of days, then a 64 a couple of days later. That's how bad this data is off. And yet we're telling people they cannot even go down in a small town to their own local court and be able to just shoot a few baskets with their son. I remember as a kid, I learned how to play basketball and spent my entire summer at a little outside of a place called Calvary Baptist Church in a little town called East Ridge, right east of Chattanooga. And used to do, that's how I spent all of my summer. In fact, there's recognition that being outside is good, that being outside is better than being confined to close quarters with continuous contact of other people, because the disease has a much harder time spreading outside. In fact, the early evidence is that the assumptions of symptomatic spread in an outside setting were completely in error. And like most other diseases of this kind, like most other forms of influenza, like most other forms of flu, like most other forms of disease that spread through the air, those that in fact what it requires is really close, continuous contact in a confined quarter environment. And yet we're having small towns restrict your ability to shoot basketball with your kid. That's the insanity of this. That's the degree everybody who ever wanted to be a petty tyrant, every little town manager, it's like Parks and Recreation gone bad. It's like everybody in terms of the old TV show. So it's like every little town manager, every little park official, every little school librarian, whoever always wanted to be a petty tyrant, you know, those the occasional rogue police officer, the sort of imperial doctor, anybody who ever wanted to have all that power, that authoritarian power over everyone else, is using this as their pretext to do exactly that and precisely that. And it's important that people like you do what you can to stand up, assert your rights and remedies, engage in appropriate civil disobedience where proper, where it fits within your rights and your constitutional rights to do so, and to point it out to other people, to point out the absurdity of it. So we thank you for your call, and thanks for calling in. Let's go to Matt in Florida.
Hey, great show. I'll just be real quick. I've been watching a lot of live streams on Periscope, where I'm watching you now, and then on YouTube. And basically you right now on Periscope, I cannot comment, or I can comment, but none of the comments are coming up. And then obviously the hearts don't work. And I mean, I feel like they're also censoring your viewership. And then on YouTube, anyone like Dr. Shiva or anyone that has an outside the mainstream view, the comments generally don't work, and the streams are, it's just really, I was wondering as a lawyer, if the live stream, if they are censoring, if you had enough people monitoring in different states, if you could maybe catch them in the act, or at least let them know that you see it. And I just want to let you know that I feel that it's pretty obvious they're kind of manipulating the way the it's not functioning right. I watch Periscope all every day, and only your show is the only one where the comments don't come up and the hearts don't work. And Just want to let you know about that. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for calling in. Yes, there's going to be every effort possible. I've been on the front lines of these big tech attempts to control, to sort of become legal gatekeepers of information. What people like Peter Thiel and Eric Weinstein call gatekeeper institutional narrative. This is the attempt. This is the sort of corrosive, corrupting effect on our intellectual and academic classes to be able to monopolize information in the same way the medical profession wants to monopolize and the politicians and the public health folks want to monopolize access to medical care. They want to access what you believe and how you believe by accessing what you think of certain sources of information and even being able to control your access to those sources of information. So, for example, and all of this was a pretext. So when they went after people like Alex Jones, when they went after people like InfoWars, it was just the preamble to what they were going to do across the board. Anybody with any independent information, anybody with any dissident ideas, anybody questioning or challenging the gatekeeper institutional narrative was going to be demeaned, was going to be defamed. They were going to try to destroy them. They were going to try to preclude and prevent ordinary everyday people from accessing their information by every means possible. And that is happening now and with intensity in the coronavirus context. So to give you an example, on YouTube, people know that if they even say the word coronavirus, then they can be demonetized. They can have their videos suppressed. They can be pushed out of the algorithm. They can be further have their other videos suddenly disappear from people's recommended list. This is what's happening. Algorithmic manipulation using AI to suppress and censor dissident and independent and different views. I mean, just several weeks ago, these same folks were promoting in the establishment institutional press, in the establishment institutional medical community, in the establishment institutional gatekeepers like big tech, who have de facto monopolies on platforms that access information, were telling you that, no, you didn't need a mask. Mask is probably bad. Mask is probably counterproductive. Mask might even make it worse. And then here within the last 2 days, they're saying, you know what? We were sort of wrong about that. There's probably a reason why people in Singapore and China have been using the mask ever since SARS. Turns out it's probably good for you. And maybe we're lying to you just to manipulate information for particular distributional purposes related to mask supplies. That's who these people are. So they're going to try to control your access to information. They're going to try to control the technologies that are accessed, that are out there. Twitter has found ways to shadow ban and suppress me ever since I sued them some years ago for doing this kind of activity in the state of California. So it's the nature of the animal. That's why it's so important that you find every way possible to send the live feeds out to as many places as you can of important information that you find valuable to as many of your friends, family, and other people in the community as you can. That's how you help beat the censorship machine, the suppression of information machine that's out there that's trying to prevent you from hearing information in the public square. Today, these big tech communities control access to our public square. And even though the Supreme Court said back in the 1930s and 1940s and California Supreme Court said in the 1970s that when you have a de facto public square, even if it's monopolized by a private community or private company, the First Amendment should apply. The practical reality is none of the courts are listening today. And so effectively, we're going to continue to try to find ways to resist, to continue to find ways to push back. And that's why your support of people like our sponsor, InfoWarsStore.com. You go there, you buy whatever product you want. You go there and if you want coffee, you want something like Survival Shield. And these are things that, you know, they're offering discounts on things that are going out of business. So there are things that are not going to be available, that are being sold out repeatedly, that may not be available in a week or two. Why are they doing it? Because they want to make sure people have access to it at a time period when they don't have necessarily the economic means that they may have had a couple of weeks ago. So that's what supports and keeps alive this ability to provide this independent platform so that people like you can have independent accesses to information. My view has always been, let everybody be part of the public forum and let everybody be part of the public square. Let everybody have their little platform. That's where the word platform comes from. You used to have a little platform and you'd stand on it in the public square in places like London, where they still have some of those old school celebrated public squares. Today, the public square is virtual, is in that space. And so places like InfoWars Store support that's sponsoring this program makes it possible for independent information to come to you. And so support that, find ways to share the links, find ways to share the information. This is going to be a continuous battle against the big tech gatekeepers who want to control and monopolize information, just like it's going to be a continuous battle against the medical gatekeepers who don't want you to have access to information or make your own medical decisions, just like people in the economic community like the bankers and the financiers and the Wall Street pals want to be able to monopolize where the funds go and where the economic activity is directed. So thanks for your call. We're going to continue to do everything we can. And if you do your part, then together we can help defeat these kind of anti-democratic efforts in the same way Joey Gilbert did in Nevada. Let's go to Robert in Florida.
Yes, Mr. Barnes, you were doing a piece last night on a order for a Florida judge, which had a couple of bizarre things. One was bodily fluids, which kind of reminded me of Dr. Strangelove. And the other thing in that was forced vaccinations. Now, this is supposed to be in a 3-week order. Is that correct?
It is and isn't a 3-week order. So here's what he did. What he said, the chief judge of that district within Florida, and I believe you're going to see these kind of orders mirrored by judges across the country, basically established, here's what we're going to have the courts really open for. And the courts are going to be effectively closed, or at least a lot of proceedings continued for a lot of other things. And he considered certain items, quote unquote, mission critical. And in those mission critical categories, what was fascinating was what was not there. What was not there was constitutional right claims, civil rights claims, constitutional protection of free expression, constitutional protection of free association, constitutional protection of church activities and religious activities, constitutional protection of gun purchases or the ability to sell guns to others, constitutional protection of privacy rights against either the waiver of it for medical privacy purposes in the virus context against people's informed consent, or in other contexts, spying on them routinely and regularly, as is now being admitted by politicians across the country, using your phone to spy on your associations, your activities, who you're traveling with. None of that is listed at all. Instead, what is listed is, hey, we're here to help enforce any violations of the curfews, help to enforce any violations of any lockdown orders, help enforce any violations of isolation orders, help enforce any violation of quarantine orders, help enforce any violation of someone that still has that private building or business open that's not supposed to be, according to the dictates of whatever local politician so declared. And as you note, included in that section was to make sure we can both do the state can do mandatory vaccinations. The courts were, that was mission critical, potentially for the courts. Why are they even talking about that? I mean, as Fauci was talking about, a vaccine for the virus wouldn't likely be available for 18 months. That's the normal time frame for the testing of the virus. And he confirmed that again today. So why is a state court in Florida suddenly concerned with mission critical, make sure we have forced vaccination court judicial activism in place to enforce it for the state or local politician trying to do so? And in that context, as you note, very much a Dr. Strangelove kind of world. That's why we use it as part of our backdrop here on this show, because that's what the real world we're sort of occupying these days. As part of that context, they included in mission critical was seizure of bodily fluids, which was really, as you point out, like something right out of that film. We're living in a Dr. Strangelove world. We're living in an X-Files world. We're living in a Simpsons world. We're living in a V for Vendetta world. That's the art. It's not any longer the case that art imitates life. We're in the case where life imitates art and some of the darkest art that could be out there. So, yes, you're right. That's what that order provided. It's very peculiar and unusual. It's in force, so to speak, for 3 weeks, but it's likely to be extended and continued constantly during the time period of any lockdown being in force. So the until Trump is able to get the federal government to reverse itself and start to put pressure on cities, counties, and states to conform, every politician in the country is going to use this as an opportunity to seize as much power as they can and then suspend as much constitutional liberty as they can. And if they crush the economy in the time being, they don't care because they think that they will rebound to their benefit in time, just as it did to the left during the Winston Churchill, which was able to, after Winston Churchill won World War II and beat Hitler, the UK government and the UK population threw him out in a landslide within months. That's what the Democrats are thinking now. So that's why you're seeing a lot of politicians who aren't worried about the economy crashing. In fact, many of them are sort of secretly hoping that it will, so that it will help defeat Donald Trump and his key Trump card, which was the economy until then. So thanks a lot for calling. Let's go next to David in Chicago.
Hey, Robert, great show. I just wanted to comment about, you know, all this going down here with Fauci and TV and the briefings. You know, I'm beginning to wonder, it's just theoretical, but if Trump is being duped, you know, basically because they, you know, they got this whole model going and, you know, they keep repeating the same things over and over again. They got their, you know, stop the spread. And, you know, it just seems like our rights being eroded. You know what I mean?
Oh, no doubt about it. I think there's a lot of concern about the people advising the president. And there's several different parts to that. If you look at Fauci, he wrote a report about the coronavirus published in the New England School of Journalism. I mean, I'm sorry, the New England School of Medicine that completely contradicts some of the statements he's making now. Because there he was talking about the mortality rate may be just the same as the flu. There's a lot of information we don't have. We really shouldn't hit panic buttons yet. And yet now he's talking about hundreds of thousands dying. And in fact, even if we had not taken efforts, millions were going to die. By the way, in fact, the estimates from the doomsday modelers was talking about 40 million people worldwide dead within a couple of months, maybe in some cases even less. We're not seeing any evidence of that. In fact, the global death rate is growing at about 10% a day. Well, by that rate, it'll take 9 days for it to even double. And so I think the current global death rate is around 40,000 or so. So we're nowhere near 40 million in 30 days or 40 days, as was being predicted. So you have to then ask yourself, why are these people giving information to the president that's contradicted by a lot of available data? Why are they advising him take tactics and methods that have never been utilized before? In the 1918 Spanish flu, which was in 1918 and then came back in 1919, came back in 1920, no city in the United States took these remedies, and those cities were able to flatten the curve all the way across the country. Some cities didn't impose any remedies and still had success, but the cities that had more success in general did take certain efforts like we're not going to do mass gatherings because kids are at risk, we're going to close schools, things of that nature, but they didn't close all of their businesses. They didn't even close most businesses. They didn't even close very many businesses. Not only that, they didn't suspend any constitutional liberties. So how is it and why is it at this point that suddenly this becomes the case? How is it that the advice he's being given, the way I always look at it is you can always have suspicion about a particular person or their motivation. Look at the content of the information they're providing. What could be their incentives or motivations given whether that information is information that makes sense in their particular role? Do we have any real doubt that Fauci and the other people that are part of the public health administrative establishment did not vote for Donald Trump in 2016? That they will not be voting for Donald Trump in 2020, that they do not have his best interest at heart. As many people have been warning the president for the last 3 years, his main vulnerability is that he cannot enact his own political instincts because the political establishment around him and the political advisors around him do not have his best interest at heart. So that's absolutely right. That's why he needs you, the people, to reach out to him and to communicate to him to make sure they're protected. That's why it's important what you're doing. So we come back in the bottom half of the hour. We'll go into your questions, answer more of your questions, and have closing argument as to what is happening in the country in this pandemic that's more panic than plague. Welcome back to American Countdown. We appreciate your calls and inquiries, and again, we recommend you go to our sponsor site to help support, make this show a viability, to help support this platform. You can go to InfoWarsStore.com. You can get 60% off at extraordinary discounts off products that are in very high demand and likely to be sold out very soon. This is being done to make sure it's accessible and affordable to people in this economic crisis. Survival Shield X3 is one of those products that's very much in high demand, and this is your opportunity to get it now. You can go through and look at what other products you like, everything from coffee to various forms of supplements to T-shirts to you name it. It's all there. So please support this important sponsor that's providing this important information gets access to you. So let's go to Adam in Canada. Adam, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, good.
Listen, this is Adam Cassidy. I got a blog, towerofbabel.ca, and I want to go over the numbers. In a population of 327 million people and a life expectancy of 80 years, by attrition, you lose 4 million people a year. So since January 1st, 1 million people have died in the United States, just like any 3-month period. 2,000 deaths is a 0.2% increase in the rate of death, okay, overall in the country. And this is collapsing the medical system, overwhelming the medical care system, and causing you to shut down the entire economy. This is a pandemic. With that much death going on, you've got so much raw data, you can create any narrative you want. This is a total fraud.
Oh, there's no doubt about what's happening. Is it is a pandemic. To give you an example, we're going to go to a video that was put together where people are going around the country filming hospitals. As we talked about at the beginning of the show and the top of the show, there's story after story after story of hospitals furloughing employees and laying people off, which doesn't make sense in the context of a overcapacity hospital crisis. If you go, and I've talked to a range of people that are doctors and nurses and medical care providers and people that have access to hospitals, they call something their census in terms of the number of people coming in, the number of hospital beds being used, the amount of ICU capacity. And most hospitals across the country are not reporting an overcapacity problem. Indeed, if you look at past years, often the flu has caused an overcapacity problem because our hospitals operate so close to capacity. People like Adam Townsend and others have pointed out on Twitter that, in fact, there simply isn't the evidence of a hospital capacity crisis currently happening in the country. And the only argument made by other people is that, well, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. But we've been hearing that now for weeks. It's right around the corner. It's right around the corner. It's right around the corner. Almost kind of like the arguments that have been used to keep us in wars in the past years. That, hey, if we don't keep doing this, something really bad is right about to happen. So let's go to this video that goes into great detail as people have gone around the country filming hospitals and seeing, do we really have an overcapacity problem right now in America?
Where's the testing? Where is it? The show that's getting put on for you. Leo and Cole Coveney and Simon will be down there for the photo op soon and have loads of people with masks letting on to be coming in to get tested. Look, dear we are. There is no bloody testing. Wake up, people. Right down to the end, look. There is no testing going on in these tents.
Remember, ABC News got caught showing footage of Knob Creek machine gun shootout. The minute I saw it, it was Knob Creek. Every year for decades they go. A couple hundred people line up with full auto machine guns with tracer rounds, and then they start shooting tannerite and gasoline cans. And again, they blow up in big 5-10 foot tall mushroom clouds. ABC cropped it, turned down the light levels, and said, Curtis City being vaporized by the evil Turks under Trump's command. It was all a lie. But we're not supposed to question them. No. Not supposed to question Smollett or question any mass shooting. Just don't question it. Or the Democrats will sue you. Well, it's an Infowars.com article by Don Salazar. Needs to go viral. CBS slammed for using coronavirus footage from Italian hospital to portray New York City.
It's the one that Rob Hu did.
So they show you a bunch of old people and others in an overcrowded hospital, and they don't show you that the other hospitals aren't actually crowded in New York. We have that footage for you next hour. In fact, we'll roll some of that B-roll in a moment after we play this, but here is the video from Sky News. CBS also ran this. Here it is.
The patients are literally gasping for air. The plastic bubbles the staff struggle to communicate through attempt to equalize the air pressure in the lungs. Nobody expected this. Nobody thought they'd be treating so many so quickly. And it's not like flu. It is chronic pneumonia, and it is killing hundreds each day.
There are now 15 patients.
The doctors say they've seen nothing like it before, and are warning other countries, especially the United Kingdom, that they will see it as well.
People who keep describing this as like flu, it's worse than that, no?
No, it's totally another thing. I think it must...
And it goes on from there. And then towards the end, we have the sandwich video of CBS News running it, but not showing you they're Italians and saying it was New York. CBS News is being called out for airing footage from an Italian hospital during a report on New York hospitals being overwhelmed. The CBS Morning News ran the report in question, was uploaded to YouTube March 25th, and covers that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo talking the Trump administration to task for not providing more ventilators. So you see that piece of black propaganda is what it's called. Saying there's not enough ventilators. We actually had a giant stockpile of them, you had to admit. Read the transcript. CBS reporter. New York's governor says FEMA gave the state 400 ventilators. To that, he said this. And he goes on to say Trump won't give them ventilators. And they go, look, our people are dying. Total lie. All fake. Giant hoax. Dr. McCamp's shot, please. So, again, you can see right here the Sky News about Italy. They run the same footage, cover it all up, and say that it is New York City. Now, let's go ahead and run some of the CBS morning report here. Go ahead and back that up, and here it is.
1,000 ICU beds.
I would be lying if I didn't say there's incredible amounts of stress.
Across the river from New York, at Holy Name Medical Center in New Jersey, the chief infectious disease specialist says his hospital has just 10 ventilators, barely enough for now.
But if the worst is yet to come, as we're expecting, then it won't be.
The mayor of Los Angeles says New York could be a preview of what's to come.
We are anywhere from about 6 to 12 days behind what we are seeing in New York City.
And now to Louisiana. Cases are growing faster
okay,
there
that's
than
enough. Then it cuts to Cuomo bitching and lying, and later he had to admit that he's got a giant stockpile of thousands and empty hospitals just waiting and ready. In fact, while I talk about this for the next few minutes, roll some of the compilation footage for TV viewers. We're going to air the audio of this in the fourth hour with Robert Barnes of the empty hospitals all over New York, all over Connecticut, all over Texas, all over California. We even have seen reporters go out and ask the police. They go, yeah, this place was full 2 weeks ago. Now no one's here. It's all empty. But they tell you that they're all full, ladies and gentlemen. We have hours of this. There are hundreds of clips all over Twitter of empty parking lots, empty everywhere. And the people show the local news showing it full. They go there and it's empty. You just saw bombshell footage, or you heard it if you're a radio listener, of them saying that a crowded hospital in Italy with people on ventilators and respirators, like Darth Vader, is America. On CBS News, this is the deception.
Okay, March 25th, back here at Advocate Lutheran Migraine Headache Hospital in Park Ridge. Now, it appears as their tent is still there. That's that negative pressure tent. Basically, it's like being in your bathroom with the fan on. Sucks all the SARS and AIDS and stuff out. Blows it into the atmosphere. And then it appears, well, they set up a tent. Big tent. That's a party tent. That tent is for their... Boy, did we overestimate the fuck out of this party. And in front of that... It appears as if they've erected a small prison.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Pressler. I live in Fairfax County, just outside of Washington, D.C., which is one of the most populated counties in the entire Commonwealth of Virginia. I'm here at the Fairfax Innova Hospital, and as you can see by the parking lot, not a lot of cars, not a lot of activity, not a lot of people walking around. I just simply wanted to do some investigative journalism myself and see it with my own eyes of here and one of the most populated hubs in America, what we were experiencing. And I just don't see a lot of people who are seeking treatment here in Fairfax County.
Sunday morning, March 29th, Rush Press. Here's your emergency entrance. There's Rush right there. Look at all the cars. Look at the throngs. Look at all the cones. Rush Presbyterian. But wait, it hasn't peaked yet. It hasn't peaked.
Because I figured all the stuff going on, you all need help, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I expect to be more packed than this, man. It's crazy.
It's been bad like this.
It's been dead like this for a while?
Yeah, it's ever since the whole virus thing.
Yeah. Wow.
Not that much people are allowed in. He knows us we're on lockdown and all that.
Yeah. All right, bro. Appreciate your help, man. No problem. Take care.
Doesn't look like anything crazy is going on.
Hey, we are at Cedar Sinai, as you can see, one of the biggest hospitals in Los Angeles, emergency room. Make a right. Folks, this is in the heart of Los Angeles, West Hollywood, getting closer to the West Side, and supposedly Los Angeles is one of the biggest hit cities, what the news is telling us. Here is the entrance to the emergency room. As you can see, no lines, nothing, just guards, and we'll make another view. As you can see, no lines. We'll make a quick right at this stop sign and we'll pull into where the ambulance entrance is. Right here, emergency ambulance entrance, and once again, dead.
Sunday morning, March 29th. Here we are at Strogers, Cook County. March 29th, 10 o'clock. There's a tent. There's some cones. Not a lot of cones going on. There's another tent. Emergency. Ogden Avenue and Damon. Bumper to bumper. You know, I think I'm going to stick with my prediction that there'd be more cones in line than patients. Okay, Friday morning, Northwestern Memorial Hospitals. There's your emergency. I think we have more cones waiting to get into the emergency room than we do people. Okay? They're overrun with cones. My statement still stands. The business to be in these days is the cones business. Cones. See, we have more cones here. Everyone has their masks. They have valet parking. It's wonderful.
Hello, folks. I'm standing outside of the Elmhurst Hospital Center in Queens, New York. And according to the media, this is the epicenter of the apocalypse. But it sure looks like a ghost town to me. Where's the ambulances? Where's the rushing patients? We heard 13 people died. By the way, the date is March 29th. CBS News, long lines of people trying to get tested. I don't see that. Now here's those tents they had set up. This is what you saw in the news. Where's the lines of the tents? Nobody's here on the tents. You know, for all the people who say, oh, I know somebody who got it, yeah, maybe some old people. But this is planned out for an agenda.
There's really nobody here, nobody around, no cars.
The parking lot's empty.
The parking lot is empty. The emergency area is empty. Where are all the people that have been tested coming through testing? The ambulances are kind of hanging out there. Absolutely nothing. Thing. And we've closed down our cities. We've bankrupt our companies for nada.
Okay, here we are now at Jesse Brown, which is about a block from Cook County and about four blocks from Rush. Sunday morning, March 29th, 10 o'clock. Here's your emergency room entrance. There it is. We have an ambulance coming here. They got about 400 people packed into that. They're going to get their test. But other than that, I'm not seeing any cones. And I'm not seeing any people either. North Shore Health System, Sunday morning, this is March 29th, 9:40. Here we have more cones, a lot more cones than patients. Well, it's still early, you know, not everybody's awake yet, and so they're not out, you know, so the virus is still asleep, so the virus itself hasn't woken up yet. So, give it a couple hours, 10 days. Remember, everything is 10 f***ing days.
What if the pandemic models predicting that this was going to be the next plague were wrong? What if the public health officials got it wrong again? Go back and read Peter Hitchens' article in the Daily Mail, which goes into great detail about how there's been a long history of these precise people predicting doom and gloom and being completely wrong. And causing a lot of harm in the process, whether it was getting what was going to happen with the swine flu wrong by a ratio of 10 times over, or whether getting a wide range of diseases wrong in terms of how they would spread within the populace and the remedies that they recommended be taken. Then you have people like President Obama suggesting a certain correlation between this and climate change. In other words, that if you accept all the pandemic plague models, they're going to use it as a pretext to say you should accept all the apocalyptic climate change models, despite the work of people like Bjorn Lundgren and others who've questioned and challenged the utility and efficacy of this, even from an environmentalist perspective. What if the doomsday models are wrong? Well, in that time period, what under the pretext of these models, we've shuttered our economy and suspended constitutional liberty. We live in a country today where pastors are being arrested for holding church, where public prayer is being outlawed, but Planned Parenthood is being protected. Does that make sense? Is that consistent with American value and constitutional liberty? We live in a country where Congress is contemplating and considering a 9/11 style commission to study what the president did vis-a-vis this virus as coercive pressure for him to continue the economic shutdown and not to take too many actions to protest the suspension of civil liberties by various mayors, governors, and town managers. We live in a country today where you have people arrested for defending themselves, as has happened in a man in Virginia who simply tried to defend his business against an intruder. We live in a country today where a 99-year-old gentleman can be arrested for doing what? For going to an engagement party at his family's home, where the family can be cited for child endangerment because they let their kids play outside with the engagement party present. That's the country we live in, based on models that to date have predicted nothing that has been accurate. Their doom and gloom forecast have foreshadowed nothing but doom and gloom for the constitutional liberties and economy in this country, not for the public health crisis that they predicted would occur. The hospital capacity problem has simply not arose in the way that they talked about. The death rate has not risen at the endless exponential rate that they predicted. They have been wrong. If they were in the betting markets in Vegas, they would already be bankrupt. But instead, they want to bankrupt America's economy and bankrupt us of our constitutional heritage and history. We cannot allow them to do so. Your right to participate in the democratic process extends to your right to second guess and question the experts in the white lab coats. This is not a live experiment where somebody in a lab coat comes in and tells you you need to shock that person across from you and people just go and do it. We need to not be those compliant people coerced into a mindset that defeats our independence and our democratic and constitutional history. We need to express and associate ourselves as the First Amendment protects us in doing. We need to be able to defend ourselves as the Second Amendment protects us in doing. We need to make sure the invasion of privacy and our incursion into that privacy does not occur with such ease and regularity as the political classes would like to do. We need to be able to protect our property and our businesses, our occupation and our wages within the due process laws and the just compensation laws that the Constitution compels. It is time to stand up for all of our rights and to guarantee all of our remedies by taking the simple actions of people like Michael Cargill did in simply standing up to people who walked up to his door and tried to shut him down. And in the same way you saw Joey did, Joey Gilbert do so for his parents and protected all the other grandparents in Las Vegas and Nevada. You can be the same. You can do the same. Be an American, stand up in the American tradition, protect your rights, assert your remedies, and we can preserve the constitutional, our core constitutional liberties as the American countdown as goes on. And as the clock tick-tocks on American freedom, you can make sure that doomsday clock never goes off.